Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, David Arquette makes his Talk is Jericho debut. He's been focusing on his wrestling career. Yes, working the indie scene mostly in Southern California, redeeming himself for what he feels was a less than stellar run in WCW. Of course, we always hear about David Arquette being the champion and kind of how that's a kind of a joke around the wrestling world. Well, that bothered him. His run in the WCW in the 90s was something that he wasn't happy about. And he felt that he really wanted to redeem himself. Now, David was a WCW champion in 2000. But it wasn't a great experience for him. He's going to explain why. He's also talking about the Scream movie franchise, the Ready to Rumble film, and one of my all-time favorites, Eight-Legged Freaks. Let's get to it. Show business legend David Arquette starts now on Talk is Jericho. So we're here in the backyard at David Arquette's house. And it's funny, I haven't seen you since we did the George Lopez show.
Oh, yeah, man.
Remember? Was it like totally Cliff of the Heart sing off or something?
You crushed me. I have to say, I didn't know this song. I honestly didn't. Also, it was a big surprise to me that we were going to be singing. But
I remember the concept was like they were going to have us do something in the ring or something. And I was like, that's so cliche. Can we do something else? And they said, well, you guys can have a sing off. Yeah. And you showed up with like a Macho Man outfit on or something like that.
Exactly.
And you're like, I don't know the song. But it was funny, but that was probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And obviously it's such an interesting story to me, which is why I'm excited to be doing this, is that you got into wrestling, then you got out, and now it's like the comeback kid.
Yeah.
You've been everywhere over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah.
I guess the easy question is, what made you decide to get back into the business or to get into the business seriously?
Seriously. I don't know. I was just kind of sick of being a joke. You know, I never really wanted people. I don't think, and it doesn't feel good to be the butt of the joke. I don't know. I get a lot of humor out of just joking about myself, or you know, not taking myself too seriously, but then when people just kind of keep doing it, and I don't know, there was just an evolution in wrestling where smaller guys were starting to do stuff.
Because it was always the punchline, and we'll talk about it, was that, you know, the WCW champion David Arquette.
Or David Arquette killed WCW.
Because I always use, if I talk about a small town, I always use, Sheboygan.
Yes.
And that's always my go-to. And the David Arquette punchline was always the go-to for a lot of ways as a champion, you know, an undeserved or whatever, a gimmick or whatever it was. So you're telling me that that really started to bother you over the years.
It did.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah, man.
I guess, I don't know why. I mean, I guess the creation of the internet where it just, then magnified its voice, you know, and then books like The Death of WCW and everything just kind of, people just kept doing it. Always left a bad taste in my mouth because I love wrestling. I've always loved wrestling, and part of the reason I did Ready to Rumble is because I love wrestling and I was going to be able to meet Macho Man and all these guys and get to hang out with them. And, you know, when I was offered the opportunity to go and I did one thing and I came out and it got a big pop and they were like, but you should come and hang out for a month. And then that'll happen.
So let's talk about this. So this, this is where it all started. Is they were doing the movie Ready to Rumble, which was very WCW influenced, in that there was all the guys in it were WCW guys, et cetera, et cetera, and you were the star.
Yeah.
And then because of the tie-in, they had you come on to the show.
Yeah, they had me come on the show. And even in, like, in WCW, I mean, in Ready to Rumble, I become a wrestler at the end of it. I'm the Law. I, like, come out and I have a gimmick, and then the final shot is, like, I'm hopping in a, you know, like a, I don't know what those things are called anymore, a Humvee, you know, a convertible Humvee.
And we, like, is that, right?
Yeah, we take off, and, you know, I'm a wrestler, you know, in the movie. So I think part of the idea was, well, he's a wrestler in the movie, have him come out and do something in the ring. But the real reason was that I was a true fan. And when I came out, I was like walking around with this little belt, just a little like replica of the belt. And I had all these guys signing it because I was, but you know, while we were doing the movie, I got to know Diamond Dallas Page and,
Canyon was
super instrumental in it.
And Helms,
Shane Helms was my, he was my stunt double. So I got to know all these guys and Booker T and all these guys just hanging out. So when I got to go on the show, it was an opportunity to just tour and see behind the curtain and be a part of it. But then I was never really a part of it. So then I didn't know what I was doing really, because, you know, I hadn't had any formal training. I was kind of thrown out there. You know it because you're a legend, but you know, there's so much you have to learn, like, and there's no way to learn it unless you start going in the ring and being a part of it and training and taking those bumps over and over again, and then just getting your body used to it, and, you know, ring awareness and all the, and then how to tell a story and match construction and all that stuff. But you don't really, I didn't really learn any of that. So they would just say, stand here. They didn't want me to do anything because they thought I'd get hurt, and they had like a insurance policy on me or something. They're like, just stay over here and you get kicked out of the ring and just move over there.
Right.
Just kind of stay out of the way. So, I mean, it was fine, but it wasn't like I got to do anything. So I always kind of wanted to. And then I, throughout the years, go to different like WWE events or whatever. I once wrote on a little piece of cardboard, former champion, with an arrow down.
Well, hold on, let's talk about how you became the champion in the first place. Because I wasn't in WCW at the time. I'd already moved to WWE, so I'm not really too sure of the story. So they had
the
you standing around.
I came out and, like, I don't know, the first time I came out was like in, I don't know if it was either here or was, or the second time was Colorado Springs. I was somewhere. And they were like, it was also vague. They were like, just stay out here. And then when he comes out, you're going to jump the rail and go in the ring. And something will happen. Something will happen. And then somebody will hit you or something. I don't remember a lot of it either anymore. But I did that. And people were like, yeah. They were like, you know, were into it for that moment. So I think that gave them the idea, like, oh, wow, that got a good reaction. WCW was going through its sort of a weird time. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, this will bring us some attention, kind of thing. So I think that's sort of why I did it. I mean, I still stand by the thing, like, if Ready to Rumble had been Fast and the Furious and it was a huge hit, it would have been a different story.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And it just wasn't a big hit.
It wouldn't be the first time. I mean, you know, Vince McMahon was the champion once, you know?
Right.
Arnold Schwarzenegger beat up Triple H. Like, guys would come in. Mickey Rourke knocked me out with one punch. I mean,
oh, man.
You know what I mean? Like, right? But so was it Russo that was the champion at the time? Or who did you beat?
I beat Eric Bischoff.
Okay.
And it was a tag team match, but, you know, all for themselves.
Yeah, gotcha.
Four-way dance or whatever. And it was just by chance. And, you know, who I really blame it on is the referee. I mean, the referees, they're very talented in wrestling. They are, but they get things wrong all the time. But, yeah, so the ref came in, and Jeff Jarrett had pinned Diamond Dallas Page, but for some reason he didn't see him. He saw me pinning. Eric Bischoff. So then he counted me out. Sorry, we're getting attacked.
That's all. Yeah,
we're coming. They're coming. I think coming for us right now.
Ardent wrestling fans that are blaming you for the death of WWE. They're gonna dive bomb us. Spitfire.
Did you?
What was your reaction when they told you? I'm assuming earlier in the day that like, hey, we're gonna have this four-way match, and David, you're gonna win and become the champion.
Yeah, that was crazy, man.
Was this your first match you'd ever had?
I may have had one match before that. I mean, I jumped in the one time.
Okay.
Then I came back, and I may have, like, done something else.
But it's, like, basically one of your very first
first few matches. And then they said, listen, yeah, we're going to I always get weird about talking about some of this stuff because I don't want to break the whole thing, but then a lot of people know about this stuff.
Yeah, we're all cool here. I know. It's a safe zone here on Talk is Jericho.
We're in a safe zone.
I got in trouble last year for having Kenny Omega on the day after we worked the Tokyo Dome show.
Oh, no kidding.
But I feel it's like a movie. You know, like you watch the Blu-ray commentary track and hear stuff that made the movie what it was, you know? But
You guys were...
At the Tokyo Dome.
You didn't hate each other?
We didn't. Yeah, we're actually we hate each other now though. We're about to hate each other again. We had a moment of reconciliation for that hour on the podcast, and that was it.
That was it.
He was out the door.
Yeah, everyone can be professional.
But I mean, just say as much or as little as you want.
No. But yeah, so they were like, this is the direction we're thinking of going and everything. I also didn't know I could say like no. I did say, well, that's a terrible idea. I mean, people are going to hate me, or they're going to hate the idea.
Hate the concept of it.
Yeah. And they explained that it would be funny, get a lot of press, and they said, well, you have to stay on till the next pay-per-view, which was a few weeks away. And I was like, that's awesome. I get to travel with you guys. And like, you know,
this is a dream for you.
Yeah. I got to hang out with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. And like, these were my heroes. They still are my heroes growing up. So,
and this is at the time when you were like emerging as a legit leading man.
Yeah.
With Ray Rumble and Scream and all that stuff that was going on. So you were, you were a big name.
I had my career was doing all right at the time. it was crazy. I was, you know, in the middle of doing 3,000 Miles to Graceland, which was another film. So while I was doing it, I had already said, well, I'm going to have to go up and finish, like, because I have to film a couple days on this movie in Vancouver. So when I went up there, I said, well, you can bring the crew and we'll do something with my ex-wife, Courtney Cox, and Kurt Russell, who are in the movie. So I got them on the show, which was cool because he took the position of all the fans, where it's like, you're the champion, and he kind of laughed at me. Like, you know, Hollywood's a lot like wrestling. I mean, you know, there's like certain things. I don't know. I could probably beat up Kurt Russell. But nobody knows. Yeah, I don't know. He's still a tough guy.
He's Snake Plissken, man.
No, he's a tough guy.
You just said, before we get to you, hit on something interesting to me right there. He said Hollywood is a lot like wrestling. Yeah. How do you mean? Politically?
Politically. Yeah, politically for sure. It's interesting. I mean, there is definitely cliques and, you know, you have to get in certain ways. Mm. Sometimes it's people you know. Sometimes it's just sheer talent. Sometimes it's drive. Mm. I don't know. Like, sometimes you're tougher than, you know, you might have to play the kid who gets beat up, but you could easily beat this guy up if you have to. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? If you get into a real fight. But
I often use the analogy, whether it's acting or wrestling, or if you're in a rock and roll band, a front man, you have to connect with your audience.
Yeah, man.
If you can connect with them, they'll always, you know, pay to see what you're doing. Yeah. And that's something I think is very similar in that respect between Hollywood and wrestling, for sure.
It's been like one of the biggest eye-opening experiences that I've had is that connection with the audience.
Right.
This whole thing is like so much deeper. And that's sort of why I wanted to come back, to really understand it, understand why people hated me so much. You know, what's wrestling all about? Why are the fans so angry or so, you know, connected to it? And the only real way you do that is by going in there and really kind of, you know, experiencing it and, you know, having all the sort of ups and downs that you have to go through in that journey. And then you get relaxed enough to then, like, you know, time goes so fast inside a wrestling ring. It's like in your head, it seems like it's taking forever. But I'll look something back and it's like a split second.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, literally like time travel, like your flash or
that's
something.
That's the saying though, if it feels like it's too long, wait longer.
Yes. Yeah, I got that. Somebody told me that too. If you feel like you're going too slow, slow down.
Yeah.
Like that was like pretty instrumental. Like,
it's interesting that you said that, man. That's something that you know, not to patronize you, but you can tell that you're learning the business.
Oh,
because
yeah.
that's something I learned not very long ago, maybe only 10 years ago when you're
oh, wow.
double sell or something. Don't Jeez. Move. I said all the time, don't move. Don't move. Don't move. Because you want people to react to what's going on.
Right.
You know?
Man. Oh, and the whole element of selling is just so huge. And then levels of selling. Mm-hmm. This guy's bigger and it hurts more. And, you know, you could get away with this and you can't get away with that. But, you know, he's going to hit me. I'm going to react. But react, like you wait for a reaction of a reaction. And then a reaction, and then a reaction. Like, there's like degrees of stuff that's really interesting to like just to navigate and figure out. And then the thing with the audience, like you said, the fans, where you just can like look directly at them, or you hear one of them say something specific, and then you have like this, connection with them. And then that's what this is about.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well, but I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
Was it interesting for you thinking of, like, when you're filming, for example, it's shoot here, change the angle, shoot, take one, take two, take five, take 67. Wrestling, there's one take, there's one chance, it's live.
Yeah.
Was that a tough transition for you?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. It was just everything. It's, you know, it's the theater of the absurd, but it's also theater of life, and it's, you know, and it's big. You know, people like, that's another thing, as far as like the speed goes, there's also the degree of like, of selling or reacting to something where I feel I'm stomping across the ring like a little baby. Like I'm literally in my head saying I'm stomping across the ring like a little baby. And then I look back on it. It's like I look a little upset.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
I mean, I couldn't believe the differences in like if it's shot from over here to what you're feeling right
but
there.
But you're playing to the camera.
Yeah.
Whereas in wrestling, you have to play to the guy in the back row.
Yeah.
Of the arena.
Yeah, and I've done plays too where there's some similarities.
That's true. Yeah.
But no, I mean like, yeah, I'm used to. Okay, we have the wide shot, so we're gonna like, you know, we have freedom. Like if you're gonna do something and figure it out, you know, if you want to work something, that's an interesting table and props situation here that my character would be interested in. That would. I don't want to talk about this, so I'm going to go, you know, entertain myself with something on this table just to try to get away from this, whatever, like, drove me to that table.
Right.
And then when we get to that table, that's where that conversation happens. And when that conversation happens, we get to this part. That's where, you know, that's what I don't want to talk about, how I, you know, hurt about this situation. and that's where you're gonna like, you know, save it. Like, mm-hmm. that's where you wait. Or you know, I don't even think save so much as that's where when you get into your close up where you want to really connect. So that's like a whole thing. And,
to play that.
Play that, and then you do it in the ring. It's a whole different thing. It's when you first see your opponent. You know what I mean? And all these things. But then all that stuff, all the subtle stuff starts playing too, which is crazy in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Where then it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just such a bizarre,
it's amazing such a transition
experience.
For you, yeah.
Yeah.
Just zipping back to when you won the title, what was the reaction? Because like you said, this is pre-internet. Were you getting good reaction, bad reaction, people pissed off, care at all?
I always think, I don't know, it's kind of, I don't want to be controversial or anything, but I think of it as like a 30% rule. Like, I consider myself a mark because of the old term, like, you know, you're at the carnival, you get hit on the back with the chalk, and you're walking around, and you got a chalk hand mark on your back, and they know you're the guy to sell everything to or to, like, fool in this situation.
Right.
But I'm literally that guy. I mean, somebody will say something like, dude, I just crashed my car, but, you know, I just got out, I hijacked another car, and that's how I got here. I'm like, what? What are you, you can't do that. We got to get rid of this car.
Mark,
you
know? / gullible, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally gullible. So I think like there's a percentage that are just always going to believe, and I'm in that percentage. Mm-hmm. And then there's the people that suspend their disbelief and just go along with it and love it. And then there's people that just are analyzing it all and, like, you know, totally on top of it. So I think there's all different levels. I don't know. What was the question? Oh, but the reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reaction was very mixed. You know, I always wanted to bring the belt out to the fans and have them take pictures with it. And then I was doing that one time right after I got it and going around. And then, boom, I get hit in the head with, like, dirt, like a big ball of dirt. And it's in my eye, and I can't see. And I look up, and it's this little black kid. He's about 8 years old. And he just gives me the finger. And I'm like, I couldn't believe.
Yeah. Like pure hatred.
Pure and utter hatred. And then I was like, oh, man. So yeah, when people like believe and they really believe, then it gets crazy because sometimes people are like, you know, do you want security? And like what do you want? I mean, some people really kind of do hate you, which is crazy. And I guess that's what heels are supposed to do. And that's,
but you weren't necessarily a heel at that point in time.
That's the problem. Like, right. I wasn't a heel. I mean, I turned at the end and became a heel. And you should really never, ever trust any from Hollywood. I mean, it was their bad in the first place, really. I mean, I'm an actor after all.
Who did you lose the title to?
You know, I never lost the title, Chris.
Still the champ.
Well, I'm not still the champ, but I never lost it.
Did you rescind it?
I sort of did. Yeah, I was on top of the triple cage during the match where I could have easily just taken the belt
easily,
and I chose not to,
right?
You see, because I understood I wasn't supposed to be the champion. Mm-hmm. It's just a bad referee decision
again.
then I had Jeff Jarrett's guitar just in case he came up, but when he and Diamond Dallas Page came up at the same time, it was at that moment that I chose the dark side. I don't know. I just really, at that moment, I was like, you know what? Dallas is it's just so positive and all this stuff, you know?
You're thinking this guy's going to be a yoga instructor someday.
Yeah. Like, yes, exactly. I had to take him down a couple notches. So yeah, I hit him with the guitar. Jeff Jarrett won it.
So then, like you said, so then you go back and go and continue acting and all this stuff. But over the years, like, dude, that was 20 years ago, 1998, 1999.
Yeah.
So what was, like you mentioned, you're sick of being the punchline. What actually was like the final straw for you to go, I'm going to get back in?
What was the final straw? No, I'd have to say it was more of a, you know, I'm getting older. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to do this forever. I was putting on a bunch of weight. Oh, I went to WrestleMania weekend, and I'm walking all around. Yeah, last year. And I had this kind of feud going on with a few people. RJ City, one of the besties.
Other wrestlers is what
you're
saying.
Yeah. Matt Fidget. So I was there, and I saw Matt Fidget, and I went into the ring, and I said, you know what? Let's get a date. So we still don't have a date. I still owe Matt Fidget a match. I got injured, and I had to cancel and all that. But then I met RJ City, so that I fought him. He was my first match back.
Did you train at this point? I see you have. You were sitting in your backyard. There's a wrestling ring.
There's
there.
A wrestling ring in my
which
backyard.
Which is great. Every kid's dream.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I'm at Stu Hart's house.
Exactly. But yeah, after I started training, I got this wrestling ring back here so I could train back here.
And, who did you train with?
Peter Avalon. He's an amazing wrestler, SoCal wrestler. Out of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood and Championship Wrestling from Arizona.
So did you call him up and say, I want to get back in, or did you know him? Like, were you going to these shows?
I called, I was going to a few of the shows. I went to Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. They do an amazing filming on Sundays where you can go. Dave Marquez is an incredible guy out there. And I know Dave Lagana, who's involved with NWA now. Mm-hmm. And, I've known him for years. He actually planted a seed a long time ago about me coming back. So it was little things. You know, you have your core group of friends that you kind of hang out with. And well, you don't. You're a legend. But when you're a wrestling fan, you have these fans that you're friends with that on top of just being friends or even if you work together or whatever, you also geek out on wrestling. So when they're in town, you go to matches together. You even plan going to, like, you know, WrestleMania together, or, like, you know, the weekend or the different fan things. So that was part of it. I know that's not so clear, but I guess it led up to that. And I was just so out of shape at WrestleMania and just watching the whole thing and going to a lot of the little shows around. Mm-hmm. And going to Ring of Honor and just seeing all the different sort of stuff going on. Just like loving wrestling. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, let's go for it.
And you've been working quite a bit. So that was just over the past year then?
Yeah, it's been this year. And then I started doing a documentary about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we've been filming a documentary.
Like about your return sort of thing?
Yeah, just sort of like, yeah. And it's really a love letter to wrestling. You know, I went to Tijuana and had an 8-man match, yeah, and that was really my first match back, and then RJ City was my first singles match back.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you have like a booking agent? Or are you calling around? Or?
I'm just, people are reaching out to me, and I call a few people. I don't really get calls back so much, but I had a meeting with some people. You know, I did something with WWE way back. I had come back once before and was a guest host on Raw. Mm-hmm. And that was an amazing experience. Again, just to sort of be back. Scream 4 was coming out, and it was sort of a way to promote it. But I was also going through a divorce at the time, and I wasn't in my best sort of mind frame. Yeah. So it was kind of like awkward showing up, and it was in New Orleans, and me and New Orleans have a love-hate relationship.
Sister New Orleans.
Yeah. So I like came out, and I don't know. I think I might have upset some people over there.
But it's interesting, like, following your comeback, and once again, like, I respected that because I thought this is really cool that he's getting in and doing it. Because anybody that follows their dream, and even though you're super successful in this other world, I know that. I do the same thing in music, right?
Right.
But, you know, I watched a couple pull-aparts, a couple things he had, a couple pushing matches and stuff, and then I saw this fucking match with the barbed wire and the glass and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching it and knowing the business, I mean, I'm assuming, unless I totally am being gullible, put the handprint back, that did not go according to plan.
No.
It looked like the finish was a little bit
that
fighting
wasn't
back and all that shit. So what happened with it? Because first I was like, what the fuck are you doing in these matches, dude? Like, you know, I understand why you're doing it, because you want people to respect what you're doing, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And I do respect it, but that was a real brutal.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Ugly, you know?
Yeah, that was ugly.
Who was that you worked with?
That was Nick Gage.
Nick Gage. It was like CZW or something?
No, it was Game Changer.
Gotcha. So,
I mean, I had agreed to do everything that I did. Mm-hmm. It just...
what was the mindset I learned of having a death match in the first place?
See, I didn't know the difference between a death match, even though I'm a fan. And I do know now, but I didn't know that they're that much different, a death match and a hardcore match. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just didn't know that if it's tables, chairs, and crutch or a signpost or like a stop sign, that's okay.
Kendo stick or whatever, right.
A kendo stick. But if you bring glass into it and barbed wire tacks, then it's a death match. I just didn't really know the difference.
It wasn't explained to you.
Well, I mean, I'd watched them.
Yeah.
But I didn't also know that there was this degree of like, oh, that's garbage wrestling. Like, I didn't even really know that term. I just thought hardcore was deathmatch. I thought that was all the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought tables and everything was kind of part of that. Like, right. So I thought I was doing like a hardcore match. Although I agreed to like stuff, you know? Because I'm not afraid of like, that's part of me coming out and doing this. It's like, so like, oh, you know, so people think that's hardcore, like jumping off crazy high heights or, you know, getting smashed with things. I could do that. I'm not scared, and you know, pain's not a real problem for me. I mean, so I thought, until I started taking all these bumps, and I broke 3 ribs in Tijuana. And,
wow.
Yeah, I've had an elbow surgery already. I mean, I may have done it really quick, but I have taken the, like, you know, the quick course on it all. But yeah, so something sort of went sideways, and I just learned a lot in that ring, and I learned a lot in that match, and I learned specifically just some of the nuanced stuff that you kind of can't talk about,
mm-hmm.
but it is about protecting yourself at all times. It's also about sort of, even if something goes wrong, sticking to the plan. So that's sort of, what I learned.
Because I'm looking, is this scar in your neck? Like, this is...
I got super lucky because I was worried that I was going to die. So because I went out of the ring and I went to my friend who was there and I was like, is it pumping? Because I knew that if it was pumping, I was going to bleed out because they didn't have an ambulance.
You have a big cut right in your throat, close
cut
to your jugular vein.
Yeah, it cut it right there.
Was that
there.
Barbed wire?
No, this was a light tube. Yeah, I wasn't supposed to pull his legs, and I pulled his legs.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was turning, it hit me in the neck.
So you're thinking this might be bleeding me out now.
I thought I was going to die,
Wow.
So I went to my friend. I said, is it pumping? Because I knew if it was pumping, they didn't have an ambulance. There's no way that I could have held it in. I would have lost too much blood.
Right.
And he said, no, it stopped pumping. So then I was like, okay. So then I went back just to finish the match.
That's a trooper right there, man. That's a tough guy. I would have said, fuck it.
I wanted to finish the match, but we didn't finish it the way we could have. But I just also didn't know, like, my neck was, like, you know, they had to sew the muscle up, too.
Wow.
Yeah, and it kind of popped up. But it is what it is. I learned a lot. I learned another, you know, there's a line in Ready Rumble that says, wrestling's not fake. And it's this, like... And I had a real argument with the director, Brian Robbins, on that, because he was like, I was yelling it, but it was like a scene with my father. My father always says, like, wrestling's stupid, and no, you're never going to amount to anything kind of thing. And he said, you're sitting here watching that fake wrestling and being a fan and having people say that always, you know what I mean, and not wrestling not getting the respect it deserved. I was like, no, like that was my like rage that I was like, shut up, Dad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I did it like that. And he said, all right, let's try it some other ways. And I did it lower, but it just isn't the same if you're not like passionate about it. So until I did this experience of actually getting in the ring and doing all this, I never knew how real it is. Mm. Like, it's like brutally real on way so many levels.
Like you said, in this live theater / stunt show, had it gone 1 millimeter either way, you could have died. You know, that's something I think, the word fake to me is not correct. I mean, it's a show, it's predetermined, it's a script, not that it's written, but we're acting a performance out. But it's just as legitimate of a sport as figure skating or rhythmic gymnastics, where a judge is giving you a score. This is a real contest of dangerous proportions, or it can be.
Yeah.
You know, when you finish that match, were you thinking, I want to do more of this, like wrestling, or were you thinking this wrestling thing has gone too far? Or
I don't know. I mean, after my first match, I was like, oh, I guess, I mean, I could be done now. You know what I mean? Like, but then I still had so much to learn. And then it starts getting in your blood. And then some of the reasons why you loved it as a kid, you start loving it as a performer.
Right.
Then it's like, and then there's the nuances of going to these different small towns and seeing America in a way you've never seen it before, the world in a way you have never seen it before. Then it's like, oh, you know, and then meeting the fans and the different areas and the different kind of fans and the different, you know, levels of promotions you go to, where one's really janky but got super hard and the nicest people, they're just happy that you came to their town. And like, you know, when you start doing stuff like that, it's really eye-opening and kind of pushes you. You're also like every time, like, you know, just, you know, pushing yourself to a limit and then just like trying to tell a story and be honest, like try to connect like honestly with real emotion, really kind of get these people on your side or hating you or whatever the thing is. It's just all really fun experience, you know what I mean? And a venue or a style or a arena or a show that is like no other, which is really what I love. I mean, I just went to a boxing match and, you know, and I go to MMA and stuff like that, and that's all insane and crazy, but I don't know. There's some crazier stuff that happens. Some of those boxing matches when it's like a chess game, you know, obviously they're great fighters, so they'd be able to hit each other more, you know what I mean? And or they're, you know, their defense is really good, but still, like, some of the stuff, I mean, I was watching the Pacquiao fight and I was like, well, you know, that was a fight with Broner, and I was like, I've had worse matches than you. I mean, literally, I've had.
Isn't that every Pacquiao fight at this point?
But those are good boxers. You know what I mean? Floyd Mayweather. Everyone says like, oh, his fights aren't that exciting because he knows how to evade punches.
That's what he does.
And
that's
then he
his
says
style.
Tactically, which is incredible. Yeah. But it's not as physically challenged. I'd love to see him go a few rounds of a match, like do a crazy match. I mean. You do it one time. I mean, you get into it and you do it, and then you're like, oh.
No, it's funny because when he had the fight with Connor last year, for some reason I was just Googling something or other, and I forgot that he had hosted Raw.
Oh, right.
And we had done a face-to-face thing, and I was like, kick your ass, Mayweather. And you see this stuff, and you're like, forget. Like, holy shit, how could I forget that I was in the ring with Floyd Mayweather challenging him to a fight?
No kidding.
You know?
That's amazing, man. You know, I forgot that. I was like looking up like worst things in WCW, and obviously I'm like on the top of the list. But I was like worst matches of all time or worst storylines or something. And then there was a Buff Bagwell's mother thing, I'd always heard about it, and I was like, oh God, I gotta watch this. And I'm watching it, And then I come driving out on a pitchfork. Yeah. And I was like, oh, man, I forgot I was even part of this storyline.
On a pitchfork or whatever.
Yeah, I did. And I was driving the pitchfork. And I was completely at a moment of like, I have no recollection of that.
Yeah.
Completely.
How many shows do you do, like, is it a, like per month, let's say?
Not too many. I mean, I usually do them in little patches. So gotcha. I'll have like two, you know, if I do... You know, I've the most I've done is like four in a month, mm-hmm. So it's not a lot compared to a lot of people. But you know, I had a string of just probably.
But are you getting what you want to get out of it?
I don't know, man. I think so. I mean, I've met some really incredible people. Hale Collins and Vic Delicious of the Now are incredible guys, and like. You meet these guys and you're like, oh, I'll be buddies with these guys for a long time. Working with Tommy Dreamer and listening to him tell stories.
Yeah,
and
great.
We got to go to House of Hardcore.
Have you worked House of Hardcore?
Yeah.
Great.
And yeah, Bully Ray threw me through a table, which I still feel to this day. I'm like,
I'm sure he did.
It's like brutal. But yeah, I mean, I've talked to people that say, I'm still learning stuff who've mm-hmm. been in the business for, you know, decades.
Right here.
Yeah, right. You're still learning stuff?
Always.
Kidding?
Dude, I learned so much in 2016.
The New Japan.
Before that, working with like, you know, Owens and Rollins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Roman Reigns and like this new generation of guys.
Yeah.
Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
Ambrose, like they wrestle a little bit differently than the way I was trained, but it's a newer version. So I would pick up the things that I could use from them.
Oh, wow.
And then once again, this past year in Japan, you're always learning. You have to always be learning.
Yeah.
It's like anything else. I don't care if it's your acting or whatever.
Yeah.
You still have to continue to evolve. That's part of being a professional.
Yeah.
You know? But speaking of acting, I want to talk a little bit about acting, your family.
Yeah,
I
mean,
it's a crazy, like... You, your sister, Patricia, your sister, Roseanne.
Rosanna, we call her. But.
And your dad?
My dad was an actor.
He was great in Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah, thank you, man.
I love that. He's awesome in it.
That's so awesome. Thank you for saying that. Yeah.
But so you,
my grandfather, too, was a guy named Charlie Weaver, who was Cliff Arquette, but his character was Charlie Weaver. He was on, like, the old Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, I know that name.
Yeah,
That was his stage name was Charlie Weaver?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I know that was your grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that name from something.
Yeah, yeah, you'll remember him. He,
Hollywood Squares, like, from
he was also 70s. On the original Tonight Show. Sorry, I'm trying to take off. That's what he looked like.
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
He read Letters Home to Mama.
Yeah,
but his parents were also... actors, and that's sort of another level of why I'm doing this is because you know, they went back to vaudeville in Toledo, Ohio. They had a little vaudeville show.
Your grandfather and your
my great-grandfather and grandmother.
Wow. And
then they had Cliff, who then sort of made the break from radio, from vaudeville to radio, and then from radio to television. And then my father, and then
do you have any other brothers or sisters?
There was Alexis who passed away.
That's right.
She was a, like, wedding singer. She was Boy George. Yeah, Alexis was amazing.
That's right. She just recently passed away.
And the bride of Chucky.
Away, right?
She was yeah. And then my brother Richmond, too. Then a lot of people don't know my brother Richmond. He likes to keep a low profile and stuff. He's an amazing writer. Mm. But he delivers the box in 7. Like, what's in the box? He's the one holding the box. Like, I don't know, man. It's just...
What a great claim to fame.
Yeah, he's the what's in the box guy.
So you grew up in a family of actors. This has been... It's been your destiny to do this.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter Coco, like, we tried to get her into soccer. We tried to get her into any kind of sport, swimming, and... She just wants to act and sing, you know, that's all she's...
But she's doing stuff, right?
Now she's acting, like, just plays and, school stuff, but she loves it. She has singing lessons and stuff like that and really loves doing these plays. She's doing 2 plays at the moment.
That's amazing, though. Like I said, it's kind of your lineage. I was going to ask you this before. I mean, and not just your family, but obviously I'm just assuming you have an agent.
Yeah.
You know, what did your agent say when you told him... I'm going back into wrestling here.
Yeah, that's been a big part of this too. I mean, in a perfect world, I've got a project that I've been pitching that I'm like you know, I always picture like, all right, Stone Cold could be the bad guy, and you know, and Mick Foley could be my dad, and like I always like have these like things, and people think of it as stunt casting or this and that. I was like, no, it's not. You guys don't understand the level of like honesty and like thinking on your toes. Like, you know, people who are successful in the entertainment industry, it takes the same qualities as it does to, like, you know, be successful in wrestling, be successful in business. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Part of the reason I think The Rock is just so successful in Hollywood is because he did all this stuff coming up. He was his own PR agent. He was his own, you know, manager, scheduler, and all this shit. So then when he starts putting it all together, he knows how to sort of sell it all.
Right, exactly. So what did your agent say, though, when you told him you're going?
They still didn't get it. I mean, I since have left my agency, so I just have my manager. But my manager's cool and kind of gets it a little more than, you know, not that my agent didn't get it. They just didn't get it. Not that they were against it or anything. But, yeah, it's hard for people to understand, and it's hard for, like, a PR company to say, like, what is a death match? And why are you doing, what is going on? Why am I getting all these calls? And are you okay? And
but you can't.
Even my wife, she doesn't know what the hell's going on. When I first told her I was going to start wrestling again, she goes, oh, yeah, okay, come on. I was like, no, I'm serious. I mean, but that's sort of my relationship with the fans. Like, everybody, like, I've been doubted my whole career as far as this stuff goes. And even in acting, you know, it's a weird business. And you stick around long enough, you'll start to figure it out. But I was on this is a kind of random and sounds like a name dropper thing. But I was on vacation with Brad Pitt one time, and I see him on the phone, and he's like, well, just have him come, like, just have him let me come in the room and I'll show it to him. You know, I'll do all those scenes and it was like, they won't even let me come in the room. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching Brad Pitt at the height of his career not be able to get an audition for a
Right.
I was like, wait a second, this never ends? I was like, are you just telling me this? Like, there's a level of where you
you can't even get in a room.
Oh, my gosh.
That's unbelievable.
That was unbelievable. I was just floored at that point.
Was the Scream series kind of your biggest moment?
Yeah,
because those movies were huge.
Yeah, they were huge. And that's this weird thing. Like, when you get a big movie and it hits and connects, and it only happens a few times and it's magical. I mean, for some people it happens more, but when all the pieces come together, it's really important how you navigate that afterwards. Because I've always been the kind of person that, like, does what I like. I'll do a kid's movie, I'll do horror film, I'll try to do a comedy, or, you know what I mean? I never really, and I don't, if I like the story and it makes sense, and you know, maybe it's a first-time director, but I believe in him, and he's got passion, and he's a filmmaker. And so I'm never really too calculated about certain things, but it's really important to be kind of calculated about stuff. There's certain actors that you never see them on red carpets unless it's their movie. That's You'll true. Never see them really in public getting their picture taken. They hide a lot. They're also the kind of people that say, if a fan comes up and says, can I get a picture? They say, like, sorry, I don't really do that. You know, I just take pictures on the screen, whatever, which is always the most awkward situation of be watching. Like, I don't know how you do that. Like, that's a lot of boundaries.
Yeah, picture.
I know you seconds, think right? that, but then there's a reason why some of those guys do that. And a lot of the time it's the bigger guys because they want to, someone said, like, why would they pay, you know, $10 to see you on camera if they could see you for free on the magazine or on the computer?
Yeah, I can understand. There's also
I can understand it, but I don't subscribe to it.
Yeah, you know, there's other ones like Ringo Starr has a no picture policy. Because
peace and love, peace and love.
But I think everybody on the freaking planet would want to take a picture with Ringo Starr.
Right.
So if you take one, then suddenly you've got a line of 50 people, and then you know.
But I also heard that Muhammad Ali held up airplanes. Which everybody on the airplane, I'm sure, was pissed off, but everybody who got a picture with him loved him.
Well, okay.
He would take a picture with everybody.
Hulk Hogan is like that.
Yeah.
Anybody that asks, he'll take it with them, whether it takes an hour or not. I guess it depends on what you kind of a person you are or whatever.
Right? Totally.
But what do you think of there's so much content now, if you're talking about Netflix and Hulu. I mean, there's so many great shows and so many great, like, if you're looking at a TV show, I don't know, like Game of Thrones, that's a movie.
Yeah.
One episode is a movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many places for actors that can go work now,
especially
with a guy of your name value.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to do more acting, or do you still want to keep...
I've still been doing little stuff.
I know
stuff,
you have, but I mean, do you want to really plunge back in again, or are you just kind of doing...
Well, I plunged, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I have a film going to Sundance, which is pretty cool. I mean, it'll be the first time I've gotten back there in a long time. It's called Mope.
Mope?
Yeah, Mope's Mope's a guy who's a extra in a porn film. they're like the lowest rung of the porn films. So it's
they
a
do?
Really
like fluffers or something.
Well, no, they're like the kind of guys that like watch, like if there's a creepy situation or like get kicked in the nuts. You know, it's really like the bottom barrel, and they do everything. They'll like be the, you know, they'll do anything behind the scenes, and and then they're always. So like do bukkake scenes and stuff like that. Like it opens on a scene
guys
like that.
No,
it's so harsh. Yeah.
So what does that mean to you to go to Sundance? Like, does that give you some like prestige?
It does, man. It's like Sundance is it's really hard to get a film that's good enough to make it in. And they're particular about what they like and what they don't like. So when they do like it, there's a cool factor of, oh, you're in a cool film now. And then, you know, it also those kind of cooler films, the indie kind of good ones when they turn out. And I do a bunch of them, and like some of them are better than others, and some of them connect with audiences, and some of them don't get seen. And, you know, it's such a weird time in business. But when they do, and when you can do that, and the right director sees it, and then they're like, oh, you don't need to be right for this or that or whatever. People start talking about you more. I don't know. You might meet someone up there that, you know, wants you
to
something.
It seems to me that you'd be like the perfect candidate for a Tarantino movie.
I know. I mean, all the other people in my family, Alexis and Rosanna, were both in
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
And Rosanna's got one of the best parts ever.
Yes,
the girl with the shit in her face.
Amazing. Yes.
And Alexis was in that too.
Alexis is the one who comes out of the room and's like pulling the gun, and none of the bullets come out.
Right.
That's Alexis.
That's right. That's
and
right.
then. No, he wasn't in. Oh, but Patricia was in True Romance, which Tarantino wrote.
Totally, man, yeah.
So, I don't know. And I'd met him way back in the day. But, you know, it's crazy. I'm sure he's got a ton of people he's got to put
in
stuff.
You grew up in this business, man, so you've seen it all. That's what I love about talking to somebody like yourself. You're like, yeah, whatever, man. Sometimes they call you, sometimes they don't, whatever. Yeah. Where someone else would be like, I need them. Give me a shot, man.
Oh, yeah. I worked with Brando.
Really?
It was on this last film, a movie called Free Money. Yes, I got to work with Marlon Brando. Yeah, that was a dream.
Did you hear the stories of him just not giving a shit?
No, he was sweet as hell to me. I mean, it was great. He said, it was snowing outside. We were in Montreal. He was like, we were just waiting around. And he's like, do you want to sit in my car? There's a heater's on. I was like, sure. He's like sitting in the back of the car, and I'm sitting directly behind him in the seat behind. He's in the passenger seat, and his wife is in the, or his girlfriend, I don't know, is in the driver's seat. And I'm just looking at the back of his head, and he's asking me questions like, where are you from? How long you been acting? Stuff like this. I'm like, oh, I'm both talking to him. And it's been cold outside. Now I'm warm, and I didn't have a cold, but I'm going like, yes. You know, I grew up in Hollywood, and I'm a...
Do you have a cold?
And I was like, no, I don't think so.
I'm sorry, Mr. Brando.
I'm going to get out now.
That's cool. Have you had some experiences working with other guys like that?
I got to work with Jeff Bridges too on
so that's another guy like you grew up
Wild
in an
Bill.
Acting family.
Yeah, he was just incredible. He played Wild Bill and Wild Bill Hickok, and I played Jack McCall, the guy who
what movie was
kills
it?
Him. Wild Bill.
Oh, Wild Bill, gotcha.
Yeah. And that was incredible just to work with him. When you ever work with those guys, it's like you see why they're stars. You know what I mean?
Different level, right?
Yeah, sort of, but they just have a I don't know. They're just, it's not so much a different level. It's like meeting a lot of, I guess it's a different level. I just think they get it. You know what I mean? Well, some of them don't get it, which is really tragic. But
when you were growing up and your dad, you know, obviously was an actor, was it ever like, did ever some buddies come over to your house when you were a kid? It's like,
yeah, my dad and his acting was like more, yeah, he did a lot of improv. So we'd go to like some of his improv shows. And one time there was Robin Williams was there and he was just like, just the greatest. And, you know, he does his Robin Williams thing where he's jumping around for characters and this and that. But then they had this one thing called Animal Transformation, which is a improv game where you get assigned a different animal or creature or something. And he was assigned a caterpillar, and somebody else is a snake, or no, somebody else, that's too close to a caterpillar. Someone else is a lion or a giraffe, and then they wander around, and then, you know, let's like take these animals and put them in a bus stop and, you know, yeah, whatever. So then... So he's a caterpillar. He goes up to the curtain and he rolls himself in the curtain and he comes out and he's like this flaming butterfly. But that was like Robin Williams for you. You know what I mean? Right. And you're watching that. So there was stuff like that. I mean, a lot of his friends were more of the sort of indie, like birth of improv guys.
That would explain why he was in Waiting for Guffman.
Which yeah, is all exactly.
Improv, right?
Yeah, and that was awesome. Just to like, it was sort of toward the end of his life, and to be able to sort of, you know, Christopher Guest to kind of invite him into his group of like these guys was really great.
What was the? Do you remember the first wrestling show that you went to? The first wrestling match that you saw?
Yeah, it was Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant at the at the Los Angeles Sports Arena. That was like the height of the whole thing. And we used to go to a lot of the, you know, the road shows. Mm-hmm. I was always like, oh, they never like, you know, they never lose the belt or like nothing changed. Yeah. Like I was always kind of frustrated.
I remember I saw it was a British Bulldogs versus Valentine and Beefcake.
Yeah.
And they used to do localized promos. I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada. And it was like, Beefcake, Valentine, we've been running on the beach. We've been pumping weights. We're going to suplex you all over the ring. I'm like, yeah, they're going to suplex all over the ring. Match happens, not one suplex, nothing happens. This is when the guys are working like 300 days a year, and they're just like maybe like a shitty little hip toss or something.
Yeah.
Like, there's no suplex. They've been running on the beach
I
and
know.
Pumping weights.
No, I know.
But you start to figure that out when you're a kid. It's like, okay, I don't. Something's not.
Right? Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how I could like do like a. Not a gimmicky thing, but like how I could not get hurt all the time. I mean,
you're starting at, you know, at a later stage than most.
Exactly. I'm 47.
Yeah, so I'm 48. I've been doing this for almost 30 years.
Man, you're
You've been
amazing.
Doing it for, you know, 3 months. Give yourself a break. I know. But like I said, as we wind down here, just the fact that you're doing it to me, I think you've gotten the respect that you deserve for coming back to do it.
Because
a lot of guys wouldn't. And I also heard, is this true? I was going to ask this earlier.
Yeah.
Did you donate the money that you made from that match to somebody?
The Pillman family
That's
and
cool.
a few others. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
From the original stuff. It just was... Yeah, it was supposed to be hidden, but then Paige talked about it one time.
Yeah, that's been out
I think
for
because
years.
I was getting so much...
Hammered, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been out there that you gave the money to Pillman's family. I think Owen's family got some of it or something like that. Yeah,
and it's supposed... You know, that's what wrestling is to me. You know what I mean? It's a family. You know, there's a total family element. And I also know that that's part of the reason why people got upset, because you're not in that group. But then once... There was a really great thing right after I wrestled my first match with RJ City, and then I came back into the locker room, and I finally felt accepted. Mm-hmm. And that was like, oh, cool, man. It was a good feeling. Mm-hmm. Because the other times, like guys like Booker T were really nice, but I was like in the locker room one time, and I said, and everyone was so upset, and I was like, well, Booker T, have you been the champion? And he's like, nope, I've never been the champion. So it was like, oh, man. And I was like, Canyon, have you been the champion? He was, no.
Yeah.
So then when I did my promo, I shot and I was like, you know, I don't deserve to be champion. Booker T deserves to be champion. Canyon deserves to be champion. And then so I get why everyone's got upset. But thank you for saying that. And thank you for coming out here. And
Yeah, man. No, like I said, I think it's really interesting to me. It's the same thing I find like with Billy Corgan, you know, promoting the NWA. And these are guys, yourself included, you don't have to do this. You're doing it because, I mean, it doesn't matter if you make $500 a show or 5,000, whatever. Right. Same with Billy. You're doing it because you love the business. And that's why I got into it and why I still do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, like I said, it takes a lot of balls to do
Wait,
that,
people make $5,000 a show.
I'm just kidding.
Apparently. I heard Steve Austin made that.
Steve Austin.
I heard he made $5,000 for one match.
I know.
In one night.
Amazing.
Last couple of questions, dude. What's the favorite performance in a movie that you've done? What's your favorite character that you played?
Mm-hmm.
And then what's your favorite match that you ever had?
Well, I always say Scream just because I met my ex-wife and I have my daughter. And like, but performance-wise, like actual character, there was a film called Dream with the Fishes that was really sort of personal. I filmed it directly after I filmed Scream. And I went right from there to this. So I went from this sort of big horror movie to a little independent movie. And it just had such heart. It was based on a true story. Finn Taylor was an amazing director on that. That was really cool to do.
Scream was so huge too because it was such a antithesis of what a horror movie was at the time when it was almost like grunge coming out in the middle of glam metal. Like it's this crazy movie that makes fun of all the movies and that really worked.
Yeah, yeah.
And Wes Craven, just a genius.
A genius and such an amazing person to work with. I mean, great directors are amazing. So I'd say...
How about Eight-Legged Freaks?
Yeah, that was fun.
I love that movie.
Just like a fun movie.
I love spider movies because I'm from Kingdom of the Spiders with William Shatner. So I always go... So I went and saw that in the theater with Hurricane, actually.
Yeah, you did.
With Helms,
I got to wrestle as him as my tag team partner, which was amazing experience.
That's cool.
He's such a legend.
Yeah, great guy. Great guy.
Like he's so funny. That guy's like the funniest.
He's got that dry sense of humor from the woods.
The best.
What's your favorite match that you've ever had?
My favorite match I've ever had, it was probably the one with Hurricane, because that was such a like a full circle.
You got a great guy out there to call it for you.
Yeah,
too.
Totally. I mean, there's nothing like working with those guys. Because
you and Hurricane versus who?
Me and Hurricane versus Brian Anthony, and he's got a henchman.
We'll find it.
Sorry.
I'll look it up on YouTube and edit it in.
His name's Anthony, too.
Anthony.
The other Anthony. Shit, I'm sorry, Anthony.
We'll give him props at the end of the show. What's your finishing move?
It's a diamond cutter. I learned it from the best, and he said I could do it.
So, did you ask him for permission?
Yeah, I did. He told me like little tricks about it, I'm a wrestler now. I've had to fill out on like hospital, like fill in sheets, like occupation. I can put wrestler, but
you cross the border.
Yeah. My diamond cutter is not always necessarily a finishing move because it doesn't always stop them. If I do it too soon, they're coming to get us again.
It doesn't always work, those finishing moves.
No, they don't.
I know.
Oh, sometimes.
Jericho, damn it. I've had guys get out of that more than I beat.
Oh, no kidding.
I try, though.
Yeah. It's the best. Some of them are for sure.
Once in a while, you get the Duke with it.
Dude,
like I said, much respect, man. And
hey,
are you
going to
continue going for a while in wrestling?
Yeah.
Until you can't do it anymore?
Pry this belt from my cold dead hands. Although I'll never win a belt again because I will never allow it to happen since I know now.
You know what you have to do is you have to find like a Windy City Wrestling or another WCW and become the champion again.
Yeah.
So you could say you're a two-time WCW champion.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There should be.
No, I think the WWE took WCW, so
I
could never. But I'd want to bring back the big gold. I don't know why it's not there.
My favorite title is always the Hogan Eagle one.
Oh, that's Eagle one is beautiful title.
It's funny because they were just, I don't know if I should even say this, they were showing me some designs for the AEW title.
Oh, God, congratulations. It's
Thanks,
so exciting.
Man. Yeah,
man.
But there's some real nice designs. That's like, nice. That one. It looks like,
yeah, old school.
Yeah, it's a good time in wrestling, man.
Absolutely.
It's a good time for you to be back. So
thanks, man.
Respect, brother.
Respect.
All right, so that tag match that Dave was talking about was actually last September for Northeast Wrestling at the Hudson Valley Community Center, Poughkeepsie. It was David and the Hurricane, Shane Helms, against King Brian Anthony and Lord Anthony Battle. That's a pretty cool name. But Dave is returning to Northeast Wrestling on August 16th for Prison Break. David and King Brian Anthony are taking on Jerry the King Lawler and Keith Youngblood. Wow, a little bit of Hollywood versus Hollywood there in the King versus Arquette. You can see it live on the High Spots Wrestling Network. Go check that out, and very, very proud, and a lot of respect for Dave for doing what he's doing to show people that he really cares about wrestling and really loves wrestling. Two thumbs up, Dave. I appreciate it. Thank you for being on the show, and thanks for all of you who are coming on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Razor Part 2. We're closing in, setting sail January 20th of 2020, but we're closing in. Guys, this is real. We are 96% sold out. It's so cool to be able to say that over 5 months away from the sail away date. You don't have much time left, and I want you to be there. It's the vacation of a lifetime. I'm going to be there. AEW, Kenny Omega, Young Bucks, Cody, Hangman Page, Britt Baker, Brandi Rhodes, Nyla Rose, Jungle Boy, MJF. How funny was he last week on Talk Is Jericho? So many other great performers and Hall of Famers. Jake the Snake Roberts, DDP is going to be there. Ric Flair, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Sean Waltman, Booker T, Queen Charmel, Victoria, Chavo Guerrero Jr., Shaw Guerrero, Vicky Guerrero. I mean, the list goes on and on. Rock and Roll from Fozzy, Farewell to Fear, Rubik's Cube, who's a great 80s cover band. Killer Queens, a great female Queen cover band. The Dave Spivak Project, Jared James Nichols, Light the Torch, Kick Axe, and of course, Brad Williams and Craig Gass and Bruce Jingles and Sarah Tian are going to make you laugh. And Dave Schrader and Beyond the Darkness telling you ghost stories under the light of the stars in the middle of the ocean. Don't miss it, guys. We're getting down to it. I mean, there's still cabins available, but not many. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Come join us for the Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. And come join us when we rock with Nickelback August 22nd in Uncasville, Connecticut. August 24th, Atlantic City, New Jersey. And then the Unleashed in the West tour starting September 5th in Denver, going through Colorado Springs, Grand Junction, Salt Lake City, Crystal Bay, Nevada, San Francisco, California, Sacramento, California, the sold-out Bank of California Stadium with Iron Maiden in Los Angeles on September 14th, September 15th, Vegas, 18th, San Diego, 19th, Tempe, 20th, Tucson, 21st, El Paso, 25th, Dallas, 26th, Houston, 27th, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, Atlanta, Georgia, finishing up September 28th. Jared James Nichols joins us for all those shows and Sons of Texas playing with us on the Texas show. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information about the gigs, all ticket info, and all Fozzy VIP. We play songs just for you at a private show when you're Fozzy VIP. Like I said, recorded the new Fozzy song this past week. It's super catchy, it's super hooky, and I can't wait for you to hear it. We'll be releasing all information on that. You will probably be hearing that on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Razor at Sea for sure, and probably on these new gigs coming up. So we're going to see you guys on the road, and we're going to see you on Friday as my buddy filmmaker Tommy Avalon comes on. He's talking about his new documentary, The Bill Murray Stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man. Bill Murray, he shows up at places and does funny, just hangs out with people, does their dishes, plays in their band, plays kickball with families, and then disappears into the night. There's a whole madness behind Bill Murray doing this. Very, very interesting stuff. Go check out The Bill Murray Stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man on Netflix. Get prepared. I'm going to talk all about it on Friday. In the meantime, in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. See you on Friday.